fish number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 22.
Mr. Ray, reel 22. We were talking about your training period with in the Royal West African Frontier Force when you were building up a battalion at the fort. You've mentioned rifle training. What about bayonet fighting? Did they do any of that at that stage?
Yes, you took them through that as well.
How did you do that?
Well, the same thing. A dummy made out of sacking and stuff with straw and leaves, you know, stuff. Head and a body, and they went through the same actions as what the Europeans did.
What about actual bayonet fighting, you know, with the
yes, that as well, with the long stick, a pole, a knob on one end and a loop on the other. For presenting the loop, that means using the bayonet, the blob, when it came through, it was for parrying, or butt stroking with the knob, you could present it. And they're quite agile. I like that.
They had no trouble with that?
No.
What about the other weapons, you know, hand grenades, Bren, that sort of thing? They wouldn't get that at that stage?
No.
This was basic training?
That was basic. Oh, no, they didn't get any of that, no. A bit too quick, that was.
Yeah. Right. So you were building up this battalion. What was your daily routine then? Yeah, I mean, you say you just went out and worked with them all day.
Practically all day, yeah.
So what would you, do you know, what time would your day start your bungalow?
Well, I'd get out of my bungalow at 7 o'clock and go to the office first. I used to do a certain amount of office work, you know.
What type of office work?
Well, I had to, the number of personnel, all the names and numbers and so forth, progress reports.
Would that be individual progress reports on an individual African soldier, or would it be a group?
Group reports, group reports. Not really. That would be presented to my company commander, and then he.
What was his name at that time?
I'm trying to think of it. He used to get a.
It was later on. Was it Howarth or something?
But no, he was the Black Duncan. He was the. He was a battalion commander. He was the commander of the fort and that.
So
recruitment.
So you're giving these reports.
Captain Courtney.
You give these reports to Captain Courtney.
Yeah.
And what else in the office?
Well, anything else that cropped up, and if there's any postings and any. You should make out the 103s for these recruits. You had an army rank and name and number, same as it had to go on a 103, it had to go on Army Form B11, and they were these medical records, brand new ones, make them all out for the number of men you had. And if any, later on, of course. We'll come to that stage later, Peter.
Okay, but so you'd be doing that for how long, the office? To 7 in the morning till?
Oh, for about an hour. Then back on the parade ground.
When would you have your breakfast? You'd have your own breakfast, would you?
But we get our breakfast about, we knock off for breakfast about 9 o'clock, have breakfast.
And were you eating English-style food then, or were you still eating...
Yes, because we used to get it supplied from Bukhazi. He had fresh meat and potatoes, tomatoes, and fruit, meat, and vegetables. And we had a mess, you see. sergeant's mess, and the officers used to have a mess there as well. I used to have a personal boy who used to look after my, do my cleaning, washing and all that. A personal boy, he was a civilian.
Did you pay him, or did the army?
I did.
How did you get on with him?
Well, I had three altogether. The first one, called Benson. He was quite good, and a bit on the arrogant side.
So they'd clean your kit?
Used to wash it, press it.
Would they do your polishing as well?
Yes.
What else would they do for you?
Get your bath water ready, put your bath things out, towels, put all that out.
How did you feel? I mean, that's normally what an officer has, a servant or a batman, usually. But it's unusual for a you know.
So, hey, good. You could leave it to him, right? But he got a bit edgy. Sometimes he wouldn't appear for hours on end. You'd wonder where he was. And when he was there, he'd just do what he wanted. He'd do it in his way, like, and he couldn't get it out of him. And anyway, he was lured away by the RSM. We got an RSM. Frank White. he offered him more money. See? So he left me. I got another one. I forgot his name. Quasi Dunkel. And he worked for a European. Now, he used to be Cock of the North. He used to ask me off for more time than he could afford, really. And he come one day, one night in evening dress. I looked at him, I said, good night, you know. Where are you going? He said, well, I'm going to, you can speak good English. I'm going to a friend's wedding party or something like that. He's going. I said, when will you be back? He said, well, the wedding takes about 3 or 4 days. I said, well, yes, you can go to the wedding party, but don't come back. Come at the end of the month, I'll pay you for what you've done. He came back, I gave him his £2 anyway, for a short term he was with me. In the meantime, there's a little chap who used to be sitting on the veranda. He's only about 12 year old, I think. 12 or 13, and he used to watch the boys, you know, they went on, and I think he was sort of learning. And I said, would you like to work for me? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can you press shirts? Yes, sir. Can you wash? Yes, sir. And every day he was sitting on the veranda, and I wondered why he was there. Like, I thought he was a friend of the lad I had, you see. So he started, and he was better than the other two. On the pens and pencils, he used to press them, put them on a chair, leave me pockets and everything, shoes, boots laid out. Didn't go wrong. And he went, he was a long time with me, that boy, he grew to a young man. Yes.
And you got on well with him. You'd obviously not like the other two.
He used to be there like a shadow. Morning, cup of tea there, and perhaps a little bit of grapefruit, all nicely done, cut up and everything. Used to have that and go out on parade. Come back, change into another clean shirt, used to get sweat.
You had to change that often then?
Oh, yes. Sweat.
Did it worsen in India then for that?
Well,
more humid.
It was damp, humid. I used to run down back and down your arms. And the natives, the soldiers, they were just the same, you know. You'd see the sweat running down their faces.
And what was the third lad's name?
Tinga Farafara.
Now, so, during the day, you'd be busy On the parade ground?
All the time.
What would you have for dinner? Would you have a break for dinner?
No, we used to have a late dinner.
What time would that be?
Eight.
So you would. What about a midday meal? Was you nothing at all?
Nothing at all.
And what time would you knock off in the afternoon?
I'd knock off about 4 o'clock.
So you didn't have a sort of rest in the afternoon at all?
An hour, between 12 and 1, or sometime half past 1 to 2, you know.
Would you sleep, or would you just...
Just lie, just take your shirt off and go in your gidder and let the air come right through, you know.
Your gidder's your...
Bungalow.
So, 4 o'clock you'd knock off, and then yeah. What would you do then?
Have a good shower, or a bath. The water's always, you didn't have to heat the water because it's always tepid anyway, the water, whether it was drinking or bathing in warm water. And get a good towel down, just get ready for mess.
That would be 6, your meal.
No, we used to get 8 o'clock in the evening. So I used to get a meal. After I'd had a bath, I would get some salad and a few biscuits. Salad.
And what would you do? What else would you do before 8?
Oh, just sit in my deck chair, read a
book. Was there much sport going on amongst the...
Not much, no. We hadn't time for sport. No training.
So at 8 o'clock you'd go to the mess?
Yes, we had to be properly dressed for mess.
What in? Full uniform?
Yes, we had to speculate and get a, what they call it, it was a mess uniform. They were tight trousers. All regimental colours were red and old gold. And a dicky bow tie. Tanner each way collar, you know, and boots to put like a black polished boot inside because they're tight fitting. Put your legs inside, and put them inside, and there's like straps underneath. We used to wear that twice a week, that one. The other dress was a shirt, tie, a tunic, chevrons on. All the chevrons were made of gunmetal, brown. They were no shiny, all brown.
So you go at 8. What would happen in the? How many would there be in the mess?
Two now. All together, the full mess, there would be about 16. Must be about 24 of us at the finish. Big long mahogany table in the sergeant's mess and seats all around. We had to sit in rank, you know, RSM at the front, sergeant majors on the other side down. CQS's down, the sergeants, and our personal servants, they used to wait on, and the cook, of course, was adjacent to the mess.
And what was it? The food was
excellent. We get soup, and I get a variation. We used to get fish. Fish. You can have it without butter or battered, cream potatoes, kale, carrots. You used to get sauce, that was made locally, hot sauce, mild sauce. You didn't get curry. It was chili sauce really what we used to get. You got plenty of your salt, pepper, vinegar and stuff. That was all supplied by Bakazi. You supply all that sort of thing. Peas, beans, and the kale. That was introduced by Lieutenant Sidebottom. We used to call him. The natives had a name for him called Tankas. That means flank out, flank ass, side, flank, ass. Used to call him that. Lieutenant Tankas. Now,
so what would you do after the meal? What would you do after your dinner? Would you stay in the mess?
We could stay in the mess and have drinks. We had our own bar.
What would you normally drink?
Schweizer lager.
Not shorts?
And shorts, yeah. Mainly, we used to get a sundown first. That was gin, lime, and Angostura. Pink gin. John Collins. We used to start one of them before we had our dinner. But we had to sit down promptly at 8 o'clock. We used to get up for about 7:30. Have a bit of chat amongst ourselves and in the ante room by the bar was. And after dinner, if you wanted to go downtown, you have to walk down in groups of three or four if you wanted.
Was that for safety? Were you liable to be attacked, or was it just for company?
We weren't going to take any chances anyway. It was more or less for company, you see. I was in a very good position because when we first went to the fort, the 8th Brigade moved out. Now, the 8th Brigade was constituted Africans and South Africans. South African NCOs. We met the rear guard, the vanguard. They went out some time before we got in and left some of these trained soldiers behind. You see, that's how it came about. I was talking to one of the South African NCOs. And where my bungalow was, there's a big banyan tree, and there's a little car stood under there, and it was thick of excrete, like of the bats, you know, bat muck on that. I'd look around, it was a little Riley and Iron sports coupe. And lifted the bonnet up and things, and I'd look around it. The tires was flat. It'd been there months and months. So I was talking about this car, and he said, "Who does that car belong to? It's been there a long time." He said, "It's mine." I said, "What are you going to do with it?" He said, "You're going away." He said, "Well, leave it. Sell it if I can." I said, "Well, how much are you going for it?" I said, "Give me what you think it's worth." So I said, "Well, I don't know what I've got in the bank like it. Towards the, at the end of the month and my expenses." Well, he says, "I'll take what he can give us. I'll give him 17 quid for it." And Les Heath, he had something to do with the transport, and he had a look at it. I said, "Come and have a look at this car." They had all gone then. I said, "This is mine now. I've paid for that." He said, "Yeah," I says, "you're a lucky bastard." So I said, "Well, look at it. Hot tires is flat." I said, "I don't know what. It's wrong." It says, "It isn't a running order." He said, that's why it's there like that. And he says, "Something wrong with the carburetor." With it being a Riley 9, that was about 1930s, something like that, when they came out, and it was it had a good body. It had good body work because it was covered partly with leather. Leather covering, and mine was red and black. And Captain Partridge, on the officers' lines, he had one. It was a similar machine, and his was green and black. But his was runnable. Anyway, Les had a look through it, and he got a foot pump, and blew the tyres up, and they were all right. So I said, "We'll have a look and." And got got some petrol from somewhere, put some petrol in the tank, got it primed up, but it wouldn't start. The battery was flat. He took the battery off, that was some time. He came back, put the battery on. I think he borrowed, Captain Partridge's battery from his car. Explained what it was for, like, and put that on. And it chuffed over a few times, sparking, it was banging and crackling, and then it was dying out. And I said, I'll have a look at it. And the carburetor head, it was a metal carburetor, and it had a square head. And there was a crack from one corner to the other. And apparently it was pulling air in. Instead of getting it regulated air, it was pulling air in straight away. So he took that off. He said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Jim. I'm going to get some of my men. He says, there's some of them that work down at the Swiss Motor Companies. And I'll fetch them up. He said, I'm going to take this engine out. I'm going to strip it down. He said, I'll get a bath if I can, so from somewhere. And I'll give it a good going over. He said, we'll practice for them when we get our transport, if we get any. And they got busy on it, cleaned it up. And one of them took the carburetor head down to the Swiss Motor Companies. He put a fine weld on and got a proper seal for it. And I managed to scrounge a battery for about £2. Put that on. It went like a little bomb. Then it was all right then. We could get in and ferry the lads down in the car.
Into Accra?
Into Accra, yes. Into the European clubs. And there used to be dancers on, you know, like native come Creoles, Europeans and that, dancing.
What were the dances like?
Something like old-fashioned dancing in England. Sometimes they used to get a bit of all jumbo, and like it was the first introduction of jive in the African way. Tom-toms and that going. But we were always welcome in the European club. Used to go there mainly.
What was it like, the European club, what was that like?
Oh, it was a proper colonial club, you know, proper Saab club. People that used to get in there, I used to train on the secretariat that was right on the coast, and the Christian Borg's castle used to stand on a prominent skyline on the point of Accra, in the city itself, big town. And the Europeans were divided up into different sectors of in the community. There was the Colibu nursing staff, European doctors, European nurses. That was the nursing staff. That was a big hospital, in Colibu Hospital. You had the bank manager, British Bank of West Africa. They had the European manager, European under manager, you had educated African tellers, that was the banking system. You had the public works department. They were responsible for drainage systems, monsoon systems, the purification of water supply. Then he had the electricity board. He was a nice little fella. He looked after the generating system. Harry Horsfall, they called him. I can see him now, a little old. He was about 62, ready for retirement. And once he told me what he did one time, he stopped him from having his booze. He said he'd had too much liquor, so he went out, he went down to the electricity generator station and pulled the plugs on the European club. not of all in darkness. railway system, railway engineers and executives, they used the club. Anyone else I can think of? And we had a governor, governor of the Gold Coast. I don't want to call him now. I know we had a colonial officer, called him London, and I got many a gallon of petrol off him. I had a bit chat to him and his wife. A few gallons of petrol for nothing, free.
Did many of the Europeans have their wives with them?
Yes. Oh, yes. And there was a George Imney, he was a Scotsman. His wife used to be an ex-matron of the hospital. She was with him. He had a lovely bungalow. He used to go, after I took them on parade, I taught them the rudiments of firing and how to.
Now that was with your European Voluntary Reserve. Yeah. What were you doing? We'll do whatever you mentioned, we'll deal with that. What did you do with them?
Took them through aiming with rifle, just they just passed the time away, you know, I mean.
They weren't serious?
Well, if it come to the push, they could use a rifle.
Did you do basic drill with them as well? Or was it just...
No.
Just rifle?
Just rifles, yes.
How often was
that? In a Bren gun. Took a Bren gun down, you see, and showed them working parts of a Bren gun. If there was any trouble there, and there was any spare weapons, and things like that, to give the European Reserve to help.
How many would there be in that?
The European, maybe about 15 to 20.
And how often would you go down?
I used to go down once a week, and Vernon Stockton, he used to go down once a week. So they were took out twice a week on the secretariat. That was overlooking the beach, plateau overlooking the beach down in Accra itself, the sea part.
Now, was there much drinking going on amongst, say, the BNCOs?
No, we used to get a bit happy, but there was no drunkenness or anything like that.
Were they warned off VD in the local
population? Oh, well, we all knew the facts of life. We just keep off altogether. No way.
What about the African troops? Did you have trouble with them with VD?
No. We only had one man at... In the battalion, to take him down to Corleyboo Hospital and took him into the pathologist for tests, and he found to have leprosy. Mr. Thompson is a pathologist.
What was your health like in the early days? Did you have any problems with it?
No, not really. No, I was all right. Yeah.
Now, how long were you at the fort just outside Accra? That was on the Deodore Road, did you say?
Dodawa.
Dodawa.
D-O-H-O-W-A. A-H.
How long were you there, do you reckon?
Oh, it must have been at least, let's see. From 1940 to about 1940.
So when did you? That's when you went to Takoradi.
No, I went to Takoradi in 19. We see, we'd formed two battalions from in that 2 years. We'd formed two battalions plus.
Do you know what the numbers were? What the battalions were called?
Yes. The Takoradi battalion that I went to, the 6th battalion, coastal defence battalion.
That was Gold Coast Regiment, though, wasn't it? And part of the Royal West African Frontier.
Yeah, it was. And the 7th battalion.
That was the other one that you'd trained.
Yeah. Yes.
So the men had come through you, and then they'd gone to Takoradi, and then you were posted there.
Takoradi, until the back end of 42, 43. Takerade was a natural natural harbour.
Where
and from where we were, we were right on top of the cliff, almost on the cliff tops, looking down into the harbour, and we could see the railway railway below, and all the goods, wagons and everything there, and it used to be a depot for repair work for the railway line that ran, I think it ran from Takoradi to Accra, and it went northwards as well, the rail line.
And what were you, what was your camp like on the hill?
Well, the camp itself was situated away from the parade ground,